Thank you so much, Michael, for being with me today on the Wave Capital's guest speaker series on relationship building in a team environment. You're my 50th guest on my podcast. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you. 50 guests. That's awesome. Good for you. Congratulations, Garrett.
Thank you so much, Michael. I really appreciate it. And we're a fellow New Jerseyan. I was born in Hackensack, New Jersey. I see that you're from the southern part of the state.
Yeah, I'm from a little town called Ocean City. So yeah, we have kindred spirits here. Yes, we both know where Highway 9 is. There's no doubt.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. When you think of relationship building in a team environment, Michael, what does relationship building mean to you in your own words?
I think, you know, in a team environment, it's about how does everyone make each other better? You know, that builds relationships. I mean, it's not a fraternity where we're all going to hang out and drink beer together or pledge. It's about a team and a team advancing itself towards a common goal. I think that's kind of what I think about in terms of that you've got to be willing to sacrifice for your teammate, and you've got to be willing to sacrifice for the common good. And you've got to be willing as the leader to demonstrate the ability to give that to the people that are following you.
Absolutely. And you know a lot about, you know, leadership and discipline. You went to Valley Forge Military Academy. Yeah. Tell me about your early upbringing and how did you decide to go to Valley Forge? Is that a school that your parents, you know, wanted you to go to? But I'm sure whatever the answer you're about to give me, I'm sure it taught you a lot about relationship building.
Well, I mean, it's actually in Wayne, Pennsylvania. It's about an hour and 45 minutes from here. You know, I was kind of floundering around in high school, didn't really have a direction. And I met a former neighbor of mine who was a football coach here in Ocean City that moved to Norristown to coach. And I just literally ran into him on the beach one day. Happenstance, just serendipitous, like most of my career. And he asked how I was doing and yada, yada, yada. And, you know, my grades weren't good. I wasn't really getting anywhere. And he's like, why don't you just come up here to go to this school? And so he kind of got me interested in it. And so I did. And, you know, I learned a lot about becoming an adult, becoming a man, you know, standing for yourself, doing things because, you know, you don't have your mother to do everything for you. Growing up as the youngest in an Italian family, you tend to be spoiled. And I learned about, you know, discipline and how to kind of get myself to a goal that I wanted to get to. And so I think it opened up the vision for me.
That's awesome. You know, my wife is Italian-Irish, so my in-laws are also Italian. So that's another thing that, you know, we have in common. We have a one-year-old son. He's half Armenian, Italian-Irish. So it's a great, great mix of ethnicities.
Yeah, sure.
When you think of, you know, your career, I was, you know, studying your resume and background, very, very impressive. Another thing that we have in common, my wife's good friend, you know, growing up, her grandfather, Rick Forzano, who's a former Detroit Lions head coach, he gave Bill Belichick his first coaching job. Yeah. I know that you worked with Coach Belichick at the Patriots. And also Rick Forzano, he used to be the head coach of the University of Connecticut when my former ESPN colleague and good friend Lou Holtz coached with him at the University of Connecticut. So a lot of great football minds, and just wanted to bring that up on our podcast.
Yeah, Rick. I mean, Rick was really instrumental in Bill, and Bill always talked so fondly of Rick. I think Bill went to his funeral. And yeah, I mean, like, you know, the one thing about this coaching world, it's a small circle. It really is. And you need people. That's one of the things I wrote about in the book, about what we've learned from other people has been tremendous. And that gives us a great sense of understanding. So, yeah.
That's awesome. I'm so happy that he spoke so fondly. And, you know, I'm sure there are a lot of words of wisdom he shared with you about Coach Forzano, the late Coach Forzano. You know, I was looking at your background, you know, very impressive. And I was reading some interesting facts. You were credited for discovering future Hall of Famer at the time, Charles Haley. What was that like when you were serving under Coach Bill Walsh with the San Francisco 49ers?
You know, I think to me it was just he asked me to go through the reports and gave me a criteria to look for, and you know, kind of a characteristic of a player to look for. And I brought two names to him, and I brought the tape, and then he made the decision that we were going to pick Haley. And so, you know, it was kind of him more. I just did the work. He gave the idea, you know, and so that was a great learning experience for me, because it taught me that anything in life is you have to scout inside out, not outside in. You know, nobody goes looking for, everybody thinks scouting is about finding, and scouting is about elimination, you know. And so when you eliminate what you don't want and you look for what you do want, then it becomes a lot easier.
And what were the things that, you know, Coach Walsh taught you? I mean, you, not only Coach Walsh, but, you know, you were with the Oakland Raiders that also, you know, went to Super Bowl 37 against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and you, you know, served under, you know, Al Davis, you know, his ownership. You also, obviously, with Coach Bill Belichick, so three of the greatest, you know, football minds ever. In the history of the sport. So just walk me through your career. I'm just fascinated to know, like, what, you know, stands out to you when you look from the beginning and since. I know it's a broad, you know, topic, but just would love to know what comes to mind.
I think what comes to mind initially is I kind of, you know, the world gets out of the way for people that know where they're going. And I wanted to be in pro football. I wanted to work in the football league. And so when I went to Valley Forge, that was the direction I was going to go in. And then I went to college, and that maintained the same direction. I went to coaching clinics. I learned about football. And then I got a job for no money working for the UNLV. And then next thing you know, I'm in the NFL, really not making any money, but I'm learning from Coach Walsh. And then that's kind of how you get your career going. So I think I had, you know, it's a little bit like what Steve Jobs talks about with its focus. You know, people think focus is just concentrating on one thing, but it's really not. It's saying no to everything else. So I had to say no to, you know, hanging out with my friends. I had to say no to making money. I had to say no to taking a job and having a life, because if I was going to be in football, I had to sacrifice these things to get to where I wanted to go, because, you know, if I waited till I was later in life, then I couldn't say no to those things. So I think a lot of it was that. It wasn't, you know, there was no, there's an old saying, you know, burn the boat, right? You know, if you don't have a boat to go back to where you started, you're just going to keep going where you're going. And so a lot of this was burning the boat.
Yeah, absolutely. And you even, you know, you were the, you know, general manager at one time for the Cleveland Browns. Did you like being a general manager? I mean, what were things about being a GM that really stood out to you and resonated with you?
I mean, you know, certainly it's a wonderful title to have. It would be better if you had, if you could control everything, but like the NFL, it's kind of splintered, and there's not everybody has, the title indicates control, but you really don't have it. But I love the league. I loved working in the league. You know, my title at the Patriots was a coaching assistant, which doesn't sound like very much, but I probably had more sway in New England than I did as a general manager in Cleveland. So it's just all circumstances. I love whatever my job title was. I loved working the league. I've never worked a day in my life. I like what I do now because I'm involved in football. I get to talk about football, and I get to write about football. And so I get to watch football. So life is good for me.
And do you like how football has evolved, you know, over the years? I know that the NFL has had, you know, its challenges with players and, you know, CTE, and just learning about the health and safety of athletes and you know, the risk and reward of the National Football League, and, you know, on so many different levels, so many different respects. Would love to know your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, look, the league is trying to do everything for player safety, and I think that's a good thing. I love the league. I mean, I love the preparation for the game. I love the element of chess that's involved in football, because it is a very chess-like game. There's pieces on the board, call them players, that can only move in certain directions. And, you know, and there's about control and who's in the lead and all the things that go into a chess match, or really kind of in a preparation for a football game. So I love that. And I love the fact about trying to lead an organization and get everybody on the same, you know, people say, I get everybody aligned, not on the same page. Everybody wants to be on the same page, but truly alignment is what they're looking for. And that's a hard thing to accomplish in the National Football League, is getting everybody aligned. Everybody has different agendas. They see things different way. And like the entertainment business, you know, it's very cutthroat. Everybody wants a chance to be the star.
And, you know, when you think about all the different titles you've had in the National Football League and or just in your professional life, you know, what are the keys to survival, if you will? You know, because, again, everybody has to be rowing in the same direction, but there are going to be differences of opinion. And, you know, it's one of those things that as professionals, we have to know how to handle adversity and, you know, seek common ground.
Yeah, I learned through life, through the mistakes of my life, and we all make them, that there are jobs you can make a difference in and jobs you can grow from. And you have to recognize where you are. If you're in a job you can grow from, don't try to make a difference. If you're in a job you can make a difference, you have to make a difference and grow, because your intellectual capacity, if it stays the same, won't go very far, won't help you in your job. So I think, and of all the jobs I've had, I think recognition of what you are involved with, jobs you can grow from, jobs you can make a difference in, I think that's the key element to anything to be successful.
Of course, of course. And, you know, you've worked alongside, you know, phenomenal coaches as well as exceptional players. You know, I mentioned Charles Haley earlier on in our interview. You also had the opportunity to work with Rich Gannon at the Oakland Raiders, Tom Brady mm-hmm. with the Patriots. Yeah. Talking about some of the players who have stood out to you, your coaching journey, who really you felt you had a really good synergy with, really made an impact on your life, and you make an impact on his life.
Well, I don't know if I made an impact on anyone's life, but they certainly made an impact on me. I mean, starting with the 49ers of Ronnie Lott, Joe Montana, the great Dwight Clark, God rest his soul, Randy Cross, some of those guys on that team taught me a lot about how teams come together, how commonality, how, you know, to be selfless and to work within that framework. I mean, there were so many. One thing I learned is all the great teams I've been a part of all liked each other. There was harmony within the locker room. It didn't mean they all went bowling together, but they all liked each other. So there, and then when I got to, and then in Cleveland with some of the players that were there, was always enjoyable to see, whether it was Eric Metcalf or Vinny Testaverde or the great Eric Turner. You know, we had some really good teams. We had some good players, Marty Schottenheimer as a coach. And then, you know, working around Brady and seeing how they all work. The commonality of all those guys is they have competitive stamina. They don't get bored. They keep doing everything the same way every single day. Whether it's Walsh or Belichick or Al Davis or Rich Gannon, they all kind of do it. You know, Rich is a great example of perseverance, because when, you know, I always tell this story, I was carrying Coach Walsh's books, and we were at the Indianapolis Hoosier Dome. It was called the Hoosier Dome at the time. And I'm carrying his notebooks around, and he stops me and says, "Who's that guy throwing down there?" I said, "Oh, that's Rich Gannon, Coach." And he said, "Well, make sure Mike Holmgren goes and works him out." And I did. Holmgren kind of got mad at me because he thought I was just promoting one of my South Jersey buddies, you know. And so, then 2002, I'm at a Super Bowl with this guy named Rich Gannon. I mean, how the world comes full circle. So, you know, I there's so many people that play an important role in your life and in your development, you know. And every day it happens, and you've got to be aware of it. That's why when we started the Daily Coach, it was really it's been a labor of love, because it forces you to see things in a different way. When you have to write every day, you look at the world differently.
And is writing something that you've always, you know, loved to do? Or is that something that you, because of, you know, it's something that you do every day, is writing, you know, therapeutic for you? Or, as you know, you look at the all encompassing nature of what writing allows you to put thoughts, you know, to paper. I mean, that must be something that you've enjoyed, of course.
Yeah, I do enjoy it. I like it. I think I've learned to love it more. I think, you know, when we're kids growing up, oh, I got to write a paper. You know, you always think of that as a chore. I don't any longer. I think to me, it's about clarity when you write. You know, if I'm getting ready to do, like, I have to do another interview here. I do Chris Russo. If I get ready to do him, then I write out what I want to do and talk about. So I have an idea. So it reinforces what I want to do as much as, you know, instead of doing it off the top of my head. So, yeah, I think it's great. I think it's one of the things that I value doing every day, whether you do it in a notebook or whether you do it on your computer or you do it on a typewriter, which is behind me. I mean, I think you do it any way you can.
And you've also have done a lot of motivational speaking. What's that been like for you to be able to engage an audience and, you know, really, you know, find topics that you feel are worthwhile, not only to you, but to audience members listening to you and carrying, you know, messages back from your speaking engagements?
Yeah, I think to me, it's really a tribute to the people I work for, because it's not me that I'm talking about. I'm talking about Bill Walsh, Al Davis, Bill Walsh, the great players, Bill Belichick. I'm talking about them. I mean, the lessons I learned from them. I think one of the regrets I have, the first book I wrote, Gridiron Genius, I wanted that book to be called The Bills of Rights for Belichick and Walsh, what I learned from both of them. And they didn't like that title, but I still think of it that way because I'm not the Gridiron Genius. The Gridiron Genius are the people I work for.
Sure. Well, I also believe what you just said to be true, because you've lived that. You've lived those times with them and coaching with them, and you see how much of a genius or geniuses they are. I did read something online, and I'm sure you can confirm this, but Coach Belichick says you're one of the smartest people he's ever worked with. You know, in the time that you worked with him at the Patriots, he says you're one of the smartest people he knows who knows football. I mean, you know, from a humility standpoint, that what could be greater words, right, from great Coach Belichick? But what does that mean to you when one of the all-time greats in the sport says that about you?
Well, I mean, I think he's such a good friend, and I value our friendship so much. I've learned so much from him. I mean, I wouldn't be able to write one book, let alone two, without him. And so I think it's very kind of him, but I think I'm still learning. You know, I think there's a lot I have to learn, even at my age. I think we all evolve. I don't think we stop learning. I think curiosity, he is as curious as anybody. I think that's part of why they're successful.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the Super Bowl teams that you've been a part of, from the Niners, the Raiders made it all the way to the Super Bowl, and also the Patriots. You think about that win against Seattle. Talk to me about that play on the sidelines. It looks like Seattle is going to be back-to-back champions, but instead of having Marshawn Lynn run into the end zone with one timeout, Seattle still had one timeout left. You think that it's just a no-brainer, and then Russell Wilson gets intercepted at that last drive. What was going through your mind on that sideline? What an exhilarating Super Bowl to be a part of.
I was up in the press box. Well, I was in the press box. I was wanting Coach Belichick to call timeout, you know, and he wasn't listening to anybody. He was just staring at the other sidelines, you know, thinking about winning the game, and he did. You know, to me, it's a tribute of his preparation. You know, he wanted to run that certain defense, and it started back in March of that year. And, you know, the notion that Marshawn would have run the ball and gotten in the end zone is a really ridiculous. We had more players than they could have blocked in the front. So, you know, that's just more media talk than it is reality. And it's just a lot of what Bill's ability to see the future and see what's happening. And I think that's really the tribute to him. You know, one thing I think that I don't think America has been fortunate enough to see is his meetings before the game on Saturday night with the coaches to tell the coaches how the game's going to go. And it's so clear and it's so precise and it's so accurate that you're just in awe of it, you know? And I think if you could see that, if, you know, people would be be would be the same thing. You know, it's just really remarkable, Gary.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, I've been a Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan since 1996 when I moved to Tampa when I was 8 years old. And you know, Tom playing for the Buccaneers for 3 years and winning a Super Bowl, does it surprise you he was able to go to another team, new offense, new city, new coaching staff, and be able to, with, you know, Rob Gronkowski, who you also know very well, to win a Super Bowl during a pandemic year when there are a lot of issues about, you know, keeping players, you know, safe and healthy and an unknown pandemic and trying to wrap your mind around, you know, those type of, you know, challenges and safety issues, and then to win a Super Bowl, does that surprise you at all?
Well, nothing about Tom surprises you. I mean, he's got such a great competitive nature and heart. I think it's really kind of in his DNA, you know, and so he still was a great football player when he left New England. And, you know, even when he retired from the Bucs last year, he was still a great player. So nothing Tom does, you know, but Tom understands that it takes more than just one guy to win. And he's very good at being able to get everybody involved and everybody do their job and feel a part of it.
Absolutely. What do you love about relationship building specifically? Is it, you know, the camaraderie amongst players? Is it the mentorship aspect? Is it the ability to, you know, we talk about, you know, control a little bit earlier. There are a lot of things that you can't control in life, but when it comes to, you know, mentoring a player, or when it comes to relationship building, there is a certain level of control. And I mean that in a good sense, because you feel like you have this, you know, responsibility, this great responsibility to try to, you know, convey a message or make a difference in a person's life when you're in that mentorship type of, serving in that type of capacity.
I think more now, I mean, when I was in Cleveland, we did a really good job of developing. I think it's really important to develop talent within your own organization, not necessarily players on the field. I mean, that has to come too, but I think you got to develop talent within, and you have to develop the people that work for you. I think the only form of currency that matters today is, are you willing to share your knowledge? And I think if you train people, young people, about what their jobs are and how they should go about it and the process, I think you have a much better chance of developing camaraderie. You have a much better chance of creating a sense of belonging. And those are important qualities to every organization. So I think what I'm proud about is the ability to teach and develop. I think that's really, and that's why we started a daily coach and try to hopefully influence people with what you talk about as much as you can, because I think it's really important that you share as you get, you know, you share your wisdom, you share your experiences, maybe more than wisdom. You know, we don't all, you know, we might not have wisdom, but we have experiences.
And what inspired you to start the Daily Coach? Is that something that was, you know, overnight you thought about it, or it was brewing for quite some time?
Like most of my life, it was serendipitous. I was living in Los Angeles at the time. I was writing Gridiron Genius. And I would have lunch or dinner with George Raveling, the great basketball coach from USC, Iowa, and Washington State. And he was a really an incredibly wealth of knowledge and information and a mentor. And, you know, we were both happened to be reading the book A Trillion Dollar Coach. And we both looked at each other and said, you know, everybody needs a coach. And so we kind of got our heads around it, and 6 months later, we started writing a Daily Coach, and we've been doing it for 4 years, and it's been fun.
That's awesome. And I love how you mentioned George Raveling, because he's been mentioned multiple times by other guests on my podcast in addition to you. And I just find that to be, you know, very symbolic, because, you know, George Raveling, you know, from what I've learned about him through my guests and also doing research on him, I mean, he's lived such a purposeful, significant, distinguished life. And the fact that he's had an impact on you speaks volumes.
He impacts everybody he touches, because he's willing to share and he's willing to listen. And he's so good at helping others. Every time you have a phone call with him, he ends the call, "What can I do to help you?" And he means it. So it's been a great experience working with him.
Of course. And I think that you also do work with Pat McAfee.
I do a show every week with Pat. Yeah, which is great. They've been tremendous to me. It's fun to do that. I mean, his show is great, entertaining, and he allows me to come on, which I really appreciate. So he's been wonderful. It's been a great another part of my career that I kind of just fell into by happenstance.
And do you catch a lot of College Game Day? Because Pat has been.
No, I haven't. I don't. I do a show from 10 to 12 too on Saturday and Sunday. So I don't have a chance to really do that as much, but I do like to listen to a show every day.
Of course. Of course. Well, tell me about your family. You know, you talk about sacrifices, you know, throughout your career, like, you know, sacrifices, you know, maybe not have the time to spend time with friends or to go out, you know, for social engagement because you've lived football. That has been your life, but you also have your family. Tell me mm-hmm. how much your family means to you. And I believe I read that, you know, your sons are also involved in the national
football. Right. Yeah, my two sons both work for the Raiders. My wife, I've been married for 35 years. I mean, she's been involved with football for pretty much most of her life, and our kids have too. And, you know, and now their kids are involved with football. So it's kind of become a family thing. It's kind of what you're involved, what you're around. So, you know, it's been a great experience. I mean, you know, she did a tremendous job of raising them because I wasn't home very much, but, you know, they have great respect for, you know, her and the process. And that's why I think they went into it. They saw how much fun I had doing it. I mean, I wasn't coming home angry or grumpy or feeling like I was working hard. So when you don't do that, you're like, well, he's having a good time at work. I want to do what he's doing. Right. So I think that's what happened.
If you weren't involved in the NFL, I know that even as early as high school, when you knew that you wanted to spend a career in football, and I only have a couple more questions left. When you look at your career going backward and now, you know, since to present day, mm-hmm. is there another profession where you said, you know what, if things were different, I would have loved to do this because I feel that I can identify or relate to this type of profession? Or has that been something you've ever contemplated because you've been so focused on one particular?
I mean, I think I'm doing it now in writing. I would have answered writer before. I get to do that now. I think I could have loved to have been just a writer, just do writing full time. I have so many other jobs I have a hard time doing just writing, but I can't complain. I'm very happy about my arc, you know, of life. And as I look back, the only advice I would give my younger self would be don't be in a rush. You know, listen to Billy Joel, Vienna waits for you.
I love Billy Joel. My family and I were at one of his last concerts last year at Madison Square Garden. And truth be told, he literally stared in my direction and gave me a salute.
There you go.
I really believe
Vienna waits for you. Vienna waits for you.
Right, exactly. Just wanted to stick that in there because I was with family and it was a great time. 5 years into the future, where would you like to be? Or are you a day-to-day type of guy? But if you could think 5 years in the future, what other things would you like to accomplish?
You know, I think I would like to maintain curiosity, you know, keep working hard, keep doing what I'm doing every day, but learn something every single day. I think we grow old by stopping learning. And I think the energy that I have at my age in 5 years, I want to keep having it and keep learning and keep asking questions. I think that's the best part you can do.
Well, thank you, Michael, for your final words of wisdom. I greatly appreciate all the time that we've spent on my podcast, The Wave Capital's guest speaker series on relationship building in a team environment. I know your time is very valuable. Thank you for working with me.
Thank you, Garrett.
Time to speak.
Yeah, let me know. And let me know when this comes out and I'll make sure I promote it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. I really appreciate you spreading the word about our interview, and I will definitely let you know when it airs. I hope you have a wonderful weekend and God bless.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks, Garrett.
Bye-bye. You're welcome. Thank you, Michael.